Okay, so I think
this is a different one than you sent today.
Yeah, I think we in the end we decided we'll go back to the other one and then we'll leave this one for next week. Okay, but it's a good thing I have extra copies. So I think we only have one overlap from the last year. So to quickly go through this, so one of the things that the Gemara, the Mishnah had talked about was the Isser Lahachil, right? That you can't give food to the animals on Yom Tov. So just to summarize why that is, so there's a few different positions, right? One is the position of Rashi. Alan, I think you were actually here for this, because when we did Rashi's position, that was like 3 weeks ago, right? Rashi's position is the reason you can't give food to the animals on Yom Tov is because Ochel Nevesh is limited to human beings. Now, we'd asked on Rashi, okay, that's very nice, but who cares? What does it matter that it's limited to human beings? You're not violating any malacha by feeding the animals. We saw two different positions in Rashi, the position of Maharam, that it must be talking about a case where you are violating malacha to feed the animals. Whatever you're violating, carrying, take your pick of malachas, or Rashi, and it was Rav Lichtenstein suggested that Rashi has a unique position in general, that anything which the Torah specifically outlines as usur becomes significant enough that it can count as something else. So in the case of Sreifas Kachim, you're not allowed to burn Kachim on Yom Tov, and the Rashi says you also can't feed Kachim to animals, because since the Torah specifically says you can't destroy it, by feeding it to animals, that is, and that's destruction, it's equivalent to Havara, and in some sense either is as significant Havara as burning it, or it is Havara, or something like that. So maybe Rashi thinks the same here. The Balamor actually rejects this Mishnah and says the fact that we actually paskin. Well, this Gemara really hangs on whether you paskin Nevesh Behema or not. We've seen the position of Tosfos, that this is a gzera, because you might come to hunt the animals, since you can't hunt them, for reasons we've discussed, you can't feed them, because you might come to hunt them. And then we saw that Rashi and Shabbos...
Domesticated animals?
What?
Aren't these domesticated animals? Domesticated?
Right, so that's what we'll come to in a second. That's really the distinction of the Gemara, right? And Tosfos says anybody you can't... The Gemara says you can hunt, so you can also feed them. Anyone you can't, then you can't. Mm-hmm. Then we saw the position of Rashi in the Rambam, Rashi in Shabbos, as opposed to Rashi here in the Rambam, who think this is Muktza, or some extension of Muktza. Right? There's this principle in the Gemara in Shabbos, that Ein Kli Nitel Davar Nitel B'Shabbos, you can't move anything, which is Muktza, move anything on Shabbos for the sake of something which is Muktza, either because it's a expansive Muktza or a Muktza L'chatzayin or all types of different formulations. And then you have the Ravid, who as the Beis Yosef articulates, might think that fish, even when you are allowed to catch them, you would still not be able to feed them because they don't depend on you. And since they don't depend on you because they can eat, you know, the stuff on the bottom of the sea, or they're mechusim and ayin, so you don't really think about them, would even when you can catch them, it would actually be usur to feed them. That was sort of the different positions that we'd seen. What we were up to last time was the halacha, which is all the way at the end of this, right? So we'll summarize the halacha, and then, you know, we'll spend more time than I thought we would on sort of wrapping up the halachic issues. Oh, Sam, how are you? Of the sugya. So Shulchan Aruch, we ended up going back to the Makor sheet from last time. That was the vote on the finishing up the halacha, not stuff we've seen already, the stuff we haven't seen. The halacha l'maisa of that stuff. I'm not kicking you out. How are you feeling?
But I can't talk properly.
Okay, I was at that for 2 weeks, so, you know, we'll survive it. Okay.
I think I mentioned this last time I was here, but the concept of the issue of Tzar Bel Chaim came up or hasn't come up yet?
No, we haven't talked about Tzar Bel Chaim yet. We will. Okay. Well, we will in a minute. Okay. We will. So okay. So what we're going to do now is we're going to wrap up the halacha on feeding animals. And then, since we have the extra time, what I think we'll do is we'll wrap up the question of trapping. Right, this was sort of our whole sugya, but specifically trapping as it relates to pets, which is something we actually haven't sort of pinned it down halacha. We've laid out the principles, but we'll do that today. And then which isn't in our sugya, but is important to just fill out the halach lemaisa picture, is the question of whether pets are mukta, which is the other issue here. So that's what we'll try to do, get these three halach lemaisa things wrapped up, and then we'll do the gemara's marasa tehe next week. So first onto the feeding. So Shulchan Aruch in 18 says as follows. You have it from last week? 18, okay. So, Dagim ve'ofos v'chayeshe mukta ein mashkim osam b'yomta v'inosam v'nemezono shema yavo likach mehem. V'kol mash asa l'achlo l'shtamish ma'v'neshu mukta azr l'talpilo. Shulchan Aruch paskins like the Rambam, that the whole sugya is about mukta. Right? The Rambam had in general said this was about mukta. And therefore, he just says, the only thing you can't feed are things which are mukta. They're not mukta, you can't. And this is a function of the sugya and Shabbos of ein davar nital el tzarech davar hanital. You can't move things unless they are for things which are not mukta. And therefore, here he just takes the Rambam straight, that the whole sugi here is about mukta. Anything which you can't move, you can't feed, and that is going to be the axis upon which you decide the sugya. The Mishnah Berura in 19 clarifies a bit. He says, "Dagim ofos kshe mukta." So, mi detala hatam b'mukta, mash medun behema kagon behema midbaris hamavur lekamon b'simin tzav tzadiches tiv gimel ogon avos v'tarnagolis homedes legadal beitzim. So, once you pass like the Rambam, that the reason you can't feed certain animals because they're mukta, so then this would apply to any animal which is mukta. And then he goes to list you what animals are going to be mukta. So, undomesticated animals, right? Behema midbaris. Or even, and this is what isn't totally clear, he said, what about a chicken, which is ometes legadal beitzim? It's totally domesticated. But it's mukta because you're raising it for eggs. And therefore, it's valuable and you're not going to eat it on Yom Tov. So, it's mukta. So the Mishnah Berurah says, right, if it's about seida, so your domesticated chicken in the coop is already trapped. So then, according to Tosfos, you'd be allowed to feed that bird because there's no gzeira mishum seida on an animal which is totally trapped. But if it's about mukta, so you could have mukta for outside reasons, like chisaron kis, like whatever you're going to say for legadol beitzim. So he says, mistamba, according to Shulchan Aruch, you can't feed these chickens right directly. He says, after lo shaych ben seida kevein dehem mukta also lash kosin l'liten b'fnehem b'zona shema yavo lechol mehen b'yom tov.
Sorry, you shaych tamon, you
Well, that's what he says. It's a chicken which you're not going to shecht. A chicken which is legadol beitzim.
But when you shecht,
So a chicken which you plan on eating is not mukta. He's saying, but a chicken which is legadol beitzim is mukta because you're not planning on shechting it. You put it aside specifically.
Don't you have to trap it first?
It is trapped. It's in your coop. It's a domesticated chicken. That's his point. Right? He's saying a domesticated chicken in your coop is.
So there's no tzayid with domesticated animals.
Not like that. Not one which is not moving anywhere, right? You could have it in a cage.
What about behema?
Well, that was what the Gemara talked about. And behema, which is already trapped, right?
Defined trapped. It's in a corral or something.
So if you remember, that was the Gemara, right? The different stages. The small pen, the big pen, do you have to still trap it? Right? All those distinctions, right, is what we saw in the Gemara, before. And, like I said, what we'll do today, which we haven't, is sort of pinning it down to the way it affects most people, which is pets. Right. Are pets trapped or not trapped? We haven't talked about that. We've talked about all the principles.
So a chicken that's not, you don't have for laying eggs.
Is not mukta. On Yom Tov.
So you can even
shecht it.
Even if you're not shechting it.
You could feed it. Because it's not mukta, exactly. Right? That's his point. Is that...
What about a dog?
We're coming to it, and that's why we're going to come to it. That was what I was going to leave it to you to read, but instead we'll discuss it. So we'll take the time now.
Okay.
So he says, fine. But that is what's right clear, is if you take the mukta thing until the end, it should be true that even something which is domesticated and trapped, if it's mukta for an outside reason, should therefore be usher to feed. And yes, pets in a moment will be a problem, because as we'll see, consensus of poskim is actually that pets are mukta. We'll come to that. It's controversial, but it's not controversial. Like, all the poskim say it. It's just, but I'll get to it.
Socially controversial.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. He said, the problem is that Shulchan Aruch himself seems to contradict himself, because just a few lines later, he seems to paskin like Tosfos, that the only things you can't feed are things which are totally b'tzeida. The chol shein mechusar and seida mutter litin alfein mezonos because of brichadosh dechein noag in olam v'chein uikar. Right. So the Mishnah Berurah says even though in this sif and sif beis Shulchan Aruch sounds like it depends on muktzah, and therefore if you decide a pet is muktzah, you I don't know why there's air conditioning. This is not the first time. It's negative 40 outside. You don't need air conditioning. You could open the door and like, but But this is a very important halacha, right? The Mishnah Berurah says that the Shulchan Aruch seems to contradict himself. In Siv Beis, he says it's about mukta. If it's about mukta, and as we'll see, most poskim think pets are mukta, you might not be able to feed your pets, which is a bit of a problem. If you think it's about Seida, on the other hand, so then your pets may be trapped, in which case it would be mutter, even if you end up poskening that pets are mukta. And the Mishnah Berurah says that the minhag olam, the psa, right, the psak mekubal, is like the second possibility, like Tosfos, that the prohibition to feed animals is a function of tzeda, and therefore any trapped and domesticated animal, even if it's mukta, will be mutter to feed. That is the position that he says lahalacha. He notes it seems to be a stira in Shulchan Aruch, but that's how he paskins. And then he adds another kula, which will help you even if you want to be machmir, and that is, what does it mean to be knows in the lifnehem? So he says, well, he thinks that kosu achronim dafka lifnehem mamish asur litein. This whole prohibition is giving it to them directly. Avalam nosin berachol ktas mehem v'hem bom v'ochlim lislan ba. That nosnim means nosnim, like you put it in their mouth or you put it close to them. But putting food in a dog dish and the dog comes and eats by itself is mutter l'kulei alma, right? Whether it's about seida, whether it's about, because if it's about seida, you're not there. The point is, you're putting it there and it can come by itself. Even if it's mukta, you could have argued, well, you're moving it, l'tzarech davar ha-mukta. But he said, in the end, he paskins, that's fine. Why came to say hekera midkar v'lo asi likach mehem? Because he says, once you have a heker, so then that solves problems. I'm not totally sure why that's true. In the seida world, I get it, right? He may only be working within Seda. Within Mukta, that doesn't really make sense. But again, the Mishnah Berurah halacha paskins like the Seda side. And he said, from the Seda perspective, you know, now, l'may nafkamina, so for example, according to this, presumably, it's mutter to put food in a bird house outside, right? Because it's berachok. Even though they're not nitzod, you're not giving it straight to them. You're putting it, right, you're putting on your, you know, on your deck, on your bird, you know, your bird thingy, and then the fish are, the birds are coming and flying by themselves whenever they want, right? So if you think that once there's a heker, so it's fine, so then presumably that would be mimutter, right? If there was a bird sitting on it, presumably you couldn't.
It's pretty hard for me to see that, because with a dog, it's one thing. A dog, you have, here's a dog house, and you usually give him his ball right here. So it's, for on Shabbos or Yontif, you put the ball over here, right?
No, it's rachok from the. Oh, you mean it, whether it's a heker?
No,
I understand.
The dog house. I always put a ball on Shabbos. I put the ball in the corner there. And
yeah,
he has to find his way over there. But the birds, that's the way you usually feed the birds.
Well, it's not the right, but it's not the way you would feed. Correct, but it's not the way you. I guess it's not. Maybe it's not the way you would feed a bird you wanted to trap. I'm not sure. Right? Yeah, you just love it. It sounds like right. It's far from the end. I don't know. You're right. I hear that maybe it's not.
Yeah, what do you mean? But in practical terms,
you can put the food in the bird feeder before Shabbos.
What?
You know what I mean? I don't see it's a problem with that.
Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, practical terms, I think it's easy to address it that way, isn't it? Because how does that consistent with the whole idea of you're not trapping, but they're completely wild.
Yeah, so again, sorry, it sounds like he would be makel on that. I don't know, you know.
But why, I don't understand the reasoning for being makel.
Well, because he's saying, right, if you put it far away from you, so it's not. Yeah.
If it's far
right,
away.
Right, so if it's heker, I mean, if it's just that if you put it when the birds are far away, so then, you know, or far away from you, right, you know, you put it on your, you know, in your backyard, not near your house, so then if it's a gzer mishum netzod, right, without heker, I could just say it's mutter because you're not near it, right? You're not going to come. If you're right, if it's heker and you always have a bird, you know, bird catcher, no, bird catcher would be a problem.
Bird feeder.
Bird feeder, I hear. I don't know.
How do you feed a domesticated bird, like a budgie or a parakeet?
Well, that you don't, right? You don't put it far. You put it, you know, there's, like, that, there's trapped, those little cage, right? You know, in the cage, there's those little, trap doors, and you sort of stick in there.
But it's right there. I mean, it's...
Yeah.
If you consider the bird muksa, then how do you do it?
So again, la halacha, he ends up poskening not that way. It's not about muktzah, it's about nitzod.
Nitzod, you can feed him.
Right, if it's in the cage.
So again, this whole point about, let's say, the bird, let's say hecker, as long as it's far away, you're permitted?
So that's what he says, right? That's what it sounds like, right?
Okay.
Again, this is Yom Tov, but that's right. That's what he says. And then he adds that he thinks this is right something in Vav. He says, and this is only for a kosher animal, right? Shema Yavolikach man, because he thinks that it's a gzera, because you might take the animal itself, right? Lachlam. But he thinks that if it's a non-kosher animal, so then it's mutter, because you're not going to try to eat the animal itself, which would be, you know, obviously a huge hat there, because then dogs, there's no shayla at all, right? Dogs, you're never going to eat, So that would waive that problem as well, right? This would only be for your pet cow or whatever, but not for a dog. So there's definitely, in terms of feeding animals, right? Once you say that it's far away, and if it's non-kosher animals, it doesn't matter. And, once you say it's exer mishum tzeda, so then you waive a lot of problems here, and you say it's not a mukta problem. And as the Mishnah Berurah said, that's the minhag olam. So for the fact that we paskin it's a mukta problem, and then all these heker issues and behemat tmeah, pashtus is whatever you paskin, you can feed the animals on, you can feed your pets, even if not directly. Well,
so people, some other person don't like the Mishnah Berurah?
No, I mean, no. We haven't yet got to what the animals are mukta. Feeding, we've sort of established. That's what we've got.
So walking the dog or something like that.
Yeah, well, that's what we'll come to. So now the Ber Halacha in 20 just adds a bit here. So talking about, Vazayin Mishnah Berurah, do it in Behemah, but we did Ram Mogan Avram, Shagas Arishan, Tibishar Tzion, Vemes, Nira came with the Ram Machaber, Shulash and Rambam, Seba Mukta, Velobet Seda, Alma, the Gamma Magam, Shain, Sin, and Nami Asar. Right, he said, if you pass them like the Rambam, so he said, then it would be usher even when there's no tzeda, right? That's the Rambam. Right, he clarifies. Right, he said this already in Mishnah Berurah Bikitzur. Now he expands. He said the Rambam is shitas yachid. He says lo mi boy, she does Rashi that hechad emazonos on alav afilu hechad ikam mishum tzeda namishar. He said, and here's all the reasons to be mekel. One is that Rashi has a position that any time is mizonos and alecha, and we saw this in Rashi, right? That even Rashi was machmir because of Mishnah Behemah. He said the exception is if you're responsible to feed them. So Rashi said even when there is a problem of tzeda, if it's your animal and you have to feed them, it's mutter. So he said, why would you be allowed to feed your pet? So here's another kula to pile on top of it, is that Rashi holds even when it is muktzah and tzeda, and even when there's tzeda problems, right? It's your horse in your big backyard, whatever. Still, if it's your animal and you're responsible for feeding it, you're allowed to feed it on Shabbos.
What's the reason you use for that?
Because Rashi in Beitza had said it's a function of nefesh behema, and he said the only nefesh which is not, you're not responsible. So what Rashi had said is, right, the Balamor had said that this depends on whether you paskin nefesh behema b'mashma. Rashi had said that even if you paskin that nefesh behema b'mashma, right, meaning you are allowed to feed animals on Yom Tov, you're only allowed to feed animals for whom you're responsible. But an animal you're not responsible, then everyone will agree it's a violation of nefesh, of ochel nefesh. Right? But the implication from Rashi is that any animal you are responsible for, since we paskin that you're allowed to feed animals on Yom Tov, it is under Ochel Nefesh, so Mimela, you're allowed to feed them. That's what Rashi said in Beitza. So he said, so Rashi is going to tell you that any animal you have to feed, even when there's a tzeda problem, you're allowed to feed them. He said, and he said, Tosos, who thinks it's about tzeda, will be Mekil. Which means what? So then in the next line he says, that means, kol shebrushu so mutter, I feel hechadika mukta, right? Tosfos, who says it's about tzeda, will say anything which is already trapped, even if it's mukta, it's mutter. Um, And it says why, right? This is Alan's question. Next line, he says, He said, why is it that we would be mekil? Because if it's your animal, if you don't feed it, it's going to be hungry. And then it'll be tzar balei chayim. So even if there was a svara of gzeira mishum tzeda or mukta, and whatever it might be, Chazal aren't going to aser something midirabbanan that calls it tzar balei chayim.
Which is
dreisa. Exactly. When in the end of the day, according to Tosfos, it's all a gzeira that you might come to trap it in shechta v'yavaris or mukta. Sorry. And he said, even according to mukta, it's not direct mukta, it's a gzeiratu mukta, right? This is how the Meiri understood it. That it's mukta because you don't want to feed something which is mukta because you might end up using that which is mukta. It's a second order mukta. So if it's a second order mukta, it's a gzeira. So we're not going to aser that mukta. Right? He said, it's more than just tzar bali chayim. Shabbos and Yom Tov are a time for animal to rest. Right? You have a chiv d'oraisa to allow your animals to rest. What type of rest is it if your animals go on a starvation diet every Yom Tov? Right? That's not a rest. The Tammuz Barav, right? That's the ultimate rest, right? It dies, right? Your animals all die of starvation every Shabbos and Yantav. What is this? Says Val Korchner, there's Daiti Din Lahach, and welcome to Lakat Seda. And therefore he said, when there's no Seda, for sure be Mutter. Ayin Magam. And Avram trusts Lomad Agam Kavanas. Rambam Chenu Dafke Chadikat Seda. And the Magan Avram thinks that even the Rambam, who thinks it's about Mukta, thinks it's only Usher, whether it's a Seda problem as all, as well. And he said, and even if you don't understand the Rambam that way, we don't paskin like the Rambam. And therefore he says, the Prichadash is Mekil. So lehalacha, right, whatever you think, what the Be'er Halacha says is you're allowed to feed your animals. Because, right, again, to go through the Svaras, Rashi said there's only a violation of Ochel Nefesh if you aren't responsible for their food. But if you are, it's no violation. That's one. If it's Exer Mishum Tzeda, so he says, if the animal's already trapped and domesticated, so then there's no problem. And even if it's not trapped, it's only Exera, so he said it might be Mutter because of Tzar Balei Chayim. He said, even if it's Muksa, if you think it's a direct Muksa, it might be Aser. But if it's a second order Muksa, like Miri, for example, so then we might not be Gozer second order Muksa when it's Tzar Balei Chayim. And then he says, if it's about Seda, even if you want to be machmir, putting the food directly in the animal's mouth, putting the food away from the animal would be mutter because it's a hekir. And again, you add tzar balei chayim to the cheshbon, so then it would be mutter. And then all of this is only with a kosher animal, right? Because you might come and trap it to eat it. But your dog, your cat, that chashash isn't even going to be a problem because there's no such gzeira. And therefore the Mishnah Berurah says, for all these reasons, the minag ha-pashut is to feed our animals, right? Animals that we own and we're responsible for, right? For whatever reason.
Is that just on Yantav though?
So some of these would only apply in Yantav, but most of them apply even in Shabbos, right? The Tzar Balei Chayim, right? The waving mukta because of Tzar Balei Chayim, the lack of a tzeda problem when you leave it far away from them, or when they're already trapped, right? All that's going to apply in Shabbos or Yom Tov. The only one which is Yom Tov dependent is the Ochel Nefesh of Rashi. But on balance, Mishnah Berurah says, definitely on Yom Tov and even on Shabbos, right? Because of these, you know, tzar balei chayim and there's no tzeda problems, whatever, a domesticated animal, pashtus, it's mutter, and even if it's not domesticated fully, so just put the food away, slightly away from it, right? Your horse, just put the food in its trough when it's not near you and it doesn't look like tzeda, it's a heker. So on balance, the Mishnah Berurah says the minog haposkim is to be mekil. Okay, so now let's sort of wrap this up with two halachic issues in terms of pets. So, you know what? Okay, I mean, I'll just do it in the order that I have it here. First question. Okay, are pets mukta? Right? This isn't our sugya, but it's important just to round out the halachic issue here. Is our pets mukta? So I gave you the summary from Ray Jachter, but here's how it goes. The Gemara says in Shabbos Kuchav Chesem and Beis that animals are mukta. And the reason is, the Magen Mishnah says, is because animals have no utility on Shabbos or Yom Tov. And therefore they're mukta machmas gufo. But here was the question that Rishonim already asked. If the reason that animals are mukta is because they have no use, what if an animal has a use? So what are the examples? So people didn't have so many pets, but you do actually get a pretty early question, which is, it sounds like a pet to me, or similar to a pet, or close to a pet, or something like this. The Rishonim dealt with the question of what if you have a kid who's crying, and the way they stop crying is you bring over the dog. Right, you bring over the animal, the rabbit, the cow, I don't know, whatever. Right, that sounds like a pet.
Bring over the cow?
I don't know. The goat. Okay, yesh lanu tayesh la tayesh yesakan velor baraglaim gamzan afkatan. Okay, whatever.
Right into the crib, right? Or something, or to the crib?
Oh, whatever, I don't know.
Well, actually, we had a dog across the street from us, and my daughter was a year and a half old. The only way to calm her down was to bring her,
you know,
to the dog.
I mean,
dog.
Dogs I get, but whatever they had, you know?
At the hospital for sick kids, they have a dog unit that they go around with.
I'm saying dogs, rabbits, take your pick, whatever, you know, cute little fuzzy animals, or big animals, I don't know. So is that mutter? So this was the shaila that the Rishonim dealt with. So Tosvos and the Mordechai and the Hagos Ashri, they cite the a position in the Balei Tosvos to say that no, then it's not muktzah, right? If they're muktzah because they're useless, so if they're not useless, then they're not muktzah. But Tosvos, Mordechai, the Hagos Ashri, and the Rosh themselves reject this position as a das yachid and say, no, even animals which can help your baby stop crying, you know, pets essentially, are mukta because that's not considered enough of a use. So I'll be honest that this is
all male oriented halacha. If women were the rabbis, this would definitely
so this is really one of the most interesting methodologically. I find this sugya interesting. I remember the way Rabbi Ben Arsh once presented it to me was as follows. He said, right, the most extensive discussion of this is in two consecutive tshuvot in the Marach or Zarua. Right, so Chaim or Zarua is not a household name, shall we say, right, of most people, right? He's, you know, maybe people know the Or Zarua, maybe. They don't know his son, right, Reb Chaim Or Zarua. Reb Chaim Or Zarua is one of the most fascinating Rishonim, period, end of story, is fascinating, but he's not so well known. So he has two tshuvot about this question, right? Are pets, right, you know, animals that you actually use in a general, regular basis for play, are they mukta? So in Tshuva Pei Aleph, he says, well, no. The whole Svara was animals were mukta, so they had no use. But pets have a use, so they're not mukta. And then in Tshuva Pei Bet, he asked this to the Rush, and the Rush wrote back to him, that is not true. We paskin like Tosvos, that even pets are mukta. So, as Rabbi Ben Arsh said, what you have here is a weird tension between authority and what makes sense. Because intuitively, most people look at it and say, Marach HaRazua sounds right. Right? Mukta means it has no purpose. Pets have a purpose, so they shouldn't be mukta. Tosvos, the Rush, they sound a bit dachuk, right? To say, it's a use, but it's not enough of a use. I mean, well, you know, it's a bit hard. But Mitzad Sheni, the way Rav Avadya says it, right? Rav Avadya puts it like this. He said, if you have the Marach HaRazua, and you have the rush is, Ray says, if it's a battle between the rush and the Marach HaRazua, you paskin like the rush. It doesn't really matter how much, you know, when you list it, when you put the list of names, on one side it's Tosfos, the rush, the Mordechai, the Gos Ashri, and the other side is the Marach HaRazua. Halacha is authority based at some level, and you know, authority will have to defer and say that it's usur. And that's how most poskim come down, right? Ramosha Feinstein says this, Rabbi Avadya Yosef says this. So then the next question you have to ask is, okay, well, even if that's true in their time,
he's not quoting his father, right?
What? Who? Which one?
Or Zura's son.
No, he's quoting himself. So then the next question the poskim deal with is, okay, can you make an ukimta and say that even though in the time of the rush, pets weren't yet, you know, it wasn't like so normal to have a pet, so maybe it's not considered mukta, maybe bizman hazeh, it's so normal for people to have pets, that even the rush would be moda, that it's not mukta. So Moshe Rav Avadya reject this. Shlomo Zalman raises this as a possibility in Shmir Shabbos, but in the end he rejects it. Right? He entertained this possibility, But he rejects it.
This includes a scene at High Dock?
No. But I didn't give you that here. But you can, it's in this article. But in this article, like, I gave you the link to the article. You can see that he has a section on seeing eye dogs. Seeing eye dogs are an exception to this because, right, the utility there is much higher. And there's a, you know, there's a fascinating discussions from seeing eye dogs in terms of bringing them to shul, where Moshe thought it was mutter, the Rav thought it was mutter, but Rav Kasher thought it was usser, Rav Breish thought it was usser. It's an interesting machlokas. You know, Rav Moshe and the Rav both thought that the potential issues are kavod of shul, and they said, look, why isn't it kavod of shul? Right, Rav Moshe said it's kavod of shul because it's, you know, necessary. The Rav said, look, the kavod of shul is determined on based on what you would allow in your own house. And even if you don't like people bringing animals in your house, most people would allow a single eye dog in their house. They understand that's not a bizayon. Rav Kasher said, no, dogs specifically are a lack of kavod because we know from the sugya of Mechir Kelev, right, that you can't bring a karban in that was a trait of a dog, because dogs, there's something anathema about dogs. And the Rav Moshe is like, I don't know what that's to do with it. Like, I don't know what that's to do with anything. And then Rav Breish says, well, we can't do anything that the church would consider disrespectful, because if they wouldn't allow seeing eye dogs into a church, we can't be less than the church, and therefore you can't allow it. So Rabbi Jachter just did the logical thing, as he wrote to the, you know, the Diocese of New York, do you allow seeing eye dogs in the church?
Of course.
And they said, of course we do. So he said, I don't know what Rabbi Breish is talking about. He's like, he may be right in theory, but Lamaisa, it's not true, so it's fine. Right, so that's his, so there is a fascinating discussion seeing eye dogs. The one posek who is willing to who's willing to entertain a different shita is Mori Barabi, is Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. Now this I found sort of funny is that Lichtenstein is a classic Brisker posek, right? He gives a lot more weight to svara, right? You know, I always say that psak is basically a dance between three, right? A balancing act between three main factors, right? Precedent, minhag, and independent analysis of sugyos. Every posek balances those, and different posek can give different weight to those factors, but everyone is weighing those factors. So in this particular case, the authority, the precedent side of it, weighs down extremely heavily to say that pets are mukta. Right? Again, it's the Rush, it's Tosfos, it's the Mordechai, it's Moshe Feinstein, it's Rabbi Avadia Yosef, Shlomo Zalman Orbach. But the svara, right, there's a good svara to saying they're not mukta, and as Rav Shmuel Zalman himself notes. Now, if you're an authority-based posek, you're going to say, too bad for the svara, it's obviously us, and that's what Rav Avadia says, right? Rav Avadia says, the svara of the Maracha Zeruah is beautiful, but it's very simple. Maracha Zeruah versus Rush wins, right? That's Rav Avadia's methodology. Now, Rav Lichtenstein is a brisker. Briskers are much more svara-oriented. Now, even svara-oriented poskim are not going to give up on authority at all. And therefore, Rav Aaron also said that Bikaroni thinks that pets are mukta. But he's quoted, and this is the only time in my life I've ever read this sefer, but in the Tshuva Meirosh Tzurim, Tshuvot Meirosh Tzurim, it's Rav Shmuel David, who is the chief rabbi of Afula. That is all I know about him. And that, he, according to Hebrew books, he was born in 1956. That's all I know. He's the chief rabbi of Afula, but apparently he's a gush guy. Right, he's a Talmud of Lichtenstein, so he asked Rav Lichtenstein, and Rav Lichtenstein, this was his compromise. He said he thinks it's usser, but because he said mistaber kedivrei makilin, he said if you ask me misvara, I think it's obviously permitted, but an authority, I can't tell you it's mutter, and therefore I'll tell you. You ask me halachically, it's usser, but because the sheet of the makilim is mistaber, I wouldn't be moche with someone who's mekil, right? So he said if people play with their pets, you ask my opinion, I would say it's usher, but I would tell you don't tell them to stop, right? Ain't sarach l'imcho. There's no need to stop people because it's a very good argument, right? So that's a very delicate balance. It's a classic move, right? It's a classic move for people who are svara oriented to say, I can't just be a maverick and say, you know, I'm going to go against everybody and say it's mutter. I mean, sad sheni. It's much easier to say yesha malismoch, so it's a tsnif lahakel, so I don't have to be moche mutav shu shogegin, blah 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 blah. And therefore, Rav Aaron said, I think it's usher on authority, Misvara, I think it should be mutter, or it's very likely mutter, and therefore, right? That's what he says, right? And then he gives you the English here at the end, right? But you can look it up in the Chuvatan Hebrew books, right? That it's proper to conduct himself in accordance with the stringent opinion of this matter, since this appears to be the opinion of Tosfos Mordechai, who was Ashrei in the Rosh, yet one need not admonish those who practice in accordance with the lenient opinion of this matter, since this issue is embroiled in a dispute amongst the Rishonim, and the logic of those who rule leniently is compelling. However, what everyone does seem to, what people do agree with, is... and this comes back to Alan's point, is if the animal's in pain, so now you have an added issue, right, which is Tzar Bala Chaim, so then Rabbi Ovadia says it's mutter, because as we've already seen,
to walk the dog, basically.
To walk the dog, move the dog, whatever it might be, right, once there's a Tzar Bala Chaim issue, then it would be mutter, right, which makes sense, right, because if you think, A, it's Derabbanan, we've seen we waive many of the muktos related to animals for Tzar Bala Chaim. And two, there's a good svar in Rishonim to say that it's not mukta at all, so once you add that to the mix, Rabbi Ovadia is willing to be made. And he said, the reason is, because as we saw already in the Mishnah Brura and the Chazon Ish Paskin this way as well, that for Tzar Bala Chaim you're allowed to feed them, even though it's a mukta problem. And therefore, he says, it's a svek sveka, right? When you're dealing with a pet in pain, right, it's a suffix whether it's mukta at all, and even if it is mukta, there's good reason to say for Tzar Bala Chaim we waive the mukta issues, and therefore in such a case the consensus would be that it would be mutter. So that's the mukta shaila. Okay, now what about the tzeda question? This was really our main sugya, for the last whatever few weeks. Is this whole sugya? So that's here at D. So Rav Neuwirth in Shmir Shabbos Galachaza succinctly defines the prohibited activity of tzeida as any act an individual does to eliminate the freedom of an animal. Right? Then the Mishnah on Shabbos and the parallel on Beitza states this prohibition includes enclosing the door of one's home if in so doing he traps an animal inside the house. So does this prohibition apply to household pets? So this is good chazara for us. Right? So he said, the Talmud and the codes distinguish between three categories of animals. One category includes animals regarding which the Talmud writes, one would say, let us bring a trap and catch it, right? This was Shimon ben Gamliel, right? Have mitzodo nitzadenu. In other words, Rashi explains, one must expend great effort to catch this animal. It's prohibited on a biblical level to catch such an animal. At the other extreme are those animals which offer no resistance to their master. Regarding this type of animal, the Talmud writes that as one is forbidden to lift because it's mukta, permitted to push that they enter their quarters. No prohibitions of tzeida apply to such animals, since one cannot speak of capturing or hunting a completely obedient animal. Tzeida is an act of eliminating an animal's freedom, and these animals have no freedom since they are completely obedient to their masters. The middle category of animals is a subject of debate. This category includes those creatures who return to their masters at night, but offer a limited degree of resistance when their masters bring them home. Regarding such animals, the Mishnah states that one who hunts a wild animal or bird that is one's possession is exempt from punishment, and Rashi explains that the exemption from punishment is based on the fact these animals have already been tamed. Right, so we have three categories, right? Totally, right, rebellious animals that you still have to expend energy to trap. That's Aser Midaraisa. Animals that are totally domesticated in your domain, no tzeda. Animals that are somewhat domesticated, so the Gemara says, you're putter. Now, what does putter mean? So we saw it's machlok rishonim. So some rishonim, the Rajba, Ravya, Bala Itter, believe that the Mishnah's term, exempt from punishment, should in this sense be understood as implying complete permissibility, since the animal has already been caught. Right? So this mid-level animal, the Rajba, Ravya, Bala Itter, rather, say, is totally mutter. Other rishonim, like the Rambam and Tosfos, say that when it says putter, it means pater avaloser, which is what it normally means. Why? Because, as they say, it has the appearance of trapping. Right? Even if it's not trapping, I mean, they're in your domain. Right? If you have to run around your house to get your dog, it looks like tzeida, so at least midrabanan should be aser. The Bir Halacha in Shin Tazayin paskins, right, that you should be machmir, but the implication is that if you need to, you can be makil. So accordingly, what would come out? So he says, the laws of tzeida depend on how well one's pet is disciplined. If, when its master seeks to move it, the animal offers no resistance, then the prohibition of sage does not apply to the creature, right? So, your turtle, right? We saw that Shlomo Zalman thought, in general, a turtle has no tzed anyways because it can't run away from you. And we noted that that depends on whether a tzav in the Gemara is a turtle or not, which is a whole discussion of itself. Rav Samet, actually. Rav Samet normally writes Tanakh articles, but he actually has... When he writes Halakha articles, it's with the same clarity that he writes Tanakh articles, and he has an article in Tumen on whether trapping a turtle is a tzeda, and he goes through the whole history of whether a tzav in the Gemara is a turtle or not, but something that apply that has no resistance would clearly be mutter midin tzeda. If the animal returns to its quarters every evening without its master's intervention, but when the master seeks to bring the animal home, it offers some resistance. So let's say a cat. Right? Cats... often, people will let them, you know, go out. They'll, like, go out, they'll run around, and they come home at night. Like, they're pretty domesticated that way. But they have a certain level of freedom. So that's going to be a machlokas. The Rambam and Tosfos are going to say it's seida midirabbanan, and therefore it's also midirabbanan. And the Rajba, the Ravi, and the Baleter are going to say that it's mutter. So in practice... the Bir Halacha concludes that one should follow the stringent opinion absent great need. However, if an animal has rebelled and will not return by itself to its quarters and resists its master, a biblical prohibition forbids catching this animal. Under no circumstance, absent a possible threat to human life, may one attempt to trap this animal, right? So let's say someone has a dog, right? Now the dog basically is partially domesticated, but I don't know. The dog, whatever, right? The dog gets into a fight with another dog and, you know, and is not listening to the master at all, right? The master is yelling at it, you know, come back, trying to stop it from biting, right, the other dog or a person or whatever, and he can't get it, right? At that point, the animal's lost control, and when you, you know, re-catch your dog, right, you know, like sometimes you can manage to calm it down and it'll come back to you. But let's say, you know, it's not like that. It's you know, you have to, like, sometimes you see these, you know, in the Heights, this was, you don't see this so much. You see it in certain neighborhoods, right? In Washington Heights, you know this, used to come to the Heights a lot. You have these people with these terrifying dogs with these huge, massive, like 3-inch thick chains on their neck. Because if that thing gets loose, right, there are these, like, attack dogs that people, like, keep, which are barely under control, but they, you know, they keep them in these ridiculous chains. But if that animal gets into a fight, right, to get it back, you have to, like, they literally have these, like, it's these thick metal chains, like, throw over its neck and drag it back. An animal like that, you know, it may be your pet, but at that point, it is totally, right, it's resisting, it's, that's, say, the d'oraisa. So the three levels, again, right, the animal, once it's lost control, now, again, if it's attacking people, so then you have potential danger to life, then you'd have a different actor, but it's attacking a dog, not a person, right? So you wouldn't be able to do anything. Your turtle, which offers no resistance, there's no tzeda problem, right? You can again, the mukta issue we saw before, but, well, you might not be able to for the mukta, but you could nudge it back into its cage, right? That you could do. Right, because that's klachar yad, and that you're allowed to do. The cat case, right, where it returns at night. So then, lechatchila, the Bir Halacha says you should be machmir, treat this drabbanan. But if, I don't know, the cat is, you know, whatever, it's a cold day, and you think the cat's going to get, you know, sick if it's out, or whatever. I don't know. You think that the cat is going to get into a fight, right? And then you're going to lose control of it. So you gently nudge it back home. Shasat chak, you could be mekel, right? It's derabanan. And then the Mishnah Berurah says, in time of great need, you can be mekel, like the position of the Rajba Ravya and the Bala Itter.
What makes an animate object muksa?
That it doesn't have a use on Shabbos.
But it doesn't have a use.
Well, no. I mean, Gemara is explicit, right? Like a right, an animal which lays eggs on Shabbos for sure is mukta because it doesn't have a use today, and it's valuable to you, right? So it doesn't have a use to you now. Right? What are you going to do? The eggs are mukta. The animals, you can't shecht it. It's Shabbos. We'll take Shabbos. Shabbos is easy, right?
But a pen has a use.
Again, that was what we said before, is that and that's what I said, is that this is one of those instances where there's a very good svara to say that pets have a use, but
I don't even know how a pet can be mukta.
Again, that's what I said, is that here, this is a, you know, in a certain sense, this is a real battle between svara and authority, right? Precedent says that pets are, that's not considered useful. But as Rav Aharon noted, especially nowadays, and Shlomo Zalman notes this, that even in the time of the Rishonim, there's a good svara to say that pets, I mean, it's clear, they're talking about a case where the animal had a use. It was making the baby stop crying. It had a use. So there's a good svara to say that an animal is not mukta. Kal vachomer b'zman hazeh, where pets are normal, there's a svara to say that a pet is not mukta. And therefore, you're right. Misvara, it makes a lot of sense.
Especially dog. I mean, you can argue that the dog basically...
You know, chanami. Again, and that's where I, you know, again, here I feel comfortable going with Lichtenstein here and saying this is really a tension between, as I said, between precedent and svara. And as I said, all psak is a balance between those three. A post like Rav Ovadia will say, I give heavy precedent to precedent, right? Precedence to precedent. And therefore, if the post can say it's us or it's us, it doesn't matter what makes sense. Rav Aharon is a brisker, gives much more weight, not total weight, to svara, and therefore says, I think it should be mutter, but the post can say it's usher, so I'm not going to say it's mutter, but I'm not going to be moche because it's a very good svara, right? It's a balancing act. Now, if a post got up and said, it's mutter because it makes sense, I know where he's coming from. I wouldn't say it's crazy. I know of no posek who does it, right? The range that I know of in poskim is Rav Ovadia who says it's usher, and Rav Lichtenstein who said it should be usher, it should be mutter, but it's usher, and therefore don't be moche. That's the range that I know of in psak.
But those are relatively recent, right? Poskim, right?
I'm saying the range of what I know in modern poskim is that. Yeah. I don't know. But I wouldn't be surprised.
We live in an urban society today. I would be curious when Jews didn't live in an urban society, that would be the approach would be different.
Well, no, I mean, it's only the 20th century poskim we even raised the possibility that it's mutter, right? In the Rishonim, it was even more of a minority position. Is that one shita in Tosfos, the Merach or Zeruah, right? It's
right,
which is, I'll be honest, a bit weird, right? Because people had more animals than not less, right? They had less pets per se, but they had more animals, which were intimate parts of their lives.
Depends on you, like the sheepdog, for example.
Nakami, or whatever. You see, they had animals. So then Ray Jachter here says another practical application of these halachos occurs when one removes the leash of a pet to allow the animal to run freely in an open area. Would one be permitted to reattach the leash on the pet on Shabbos and Yom Tov only if the animal is obedient to its owner? However, if the animal is somewhat disobedient to the owner and resists its owner, it is best not to reattach the leash. It's proper not to remove the leash of such an animal in open space in order to avoid the necessity of relying on the lenient opinion. Now, you might, by the way, you be able to walk a dog on Shabbos, right? Because we saw that the mukta issue only applies to moving it itself, but like nudging it is fine, right? Like walking your dog, you're not pulling it. So presumably that goes under the heter the post can bring of, of allowing a domestic, right, at least when the dog is under control, of putting a leash on it and letting it walk in front of you, right, and, you know, you're just nudging it along, or it's even walking by itself, right, you're just restraining it and preventing it from getting free, right? When the poskim talk about it being mukta, presumably they mean where you're, you know, picking it up and cuddling it or whatever and moving it around, but it sounds like from these poskim that walking a dog might be mutter because you're not, you know, you're not picking it up, it's walking by of its own accord, which is, that's what it sounds like. I'm not totally sure, but that's what it sounds like. I mean, that's what it sounds like, right? I mean, the poskim talked about it. They said it's a problem of moving it, like of moving it, right? Walking the dog, you aren't really moving it. Right, then he says, in addition, care needs to be taken to avoid trapping a less than obedient animal. For example, one should not put a leash on such an animal if the door to the house is not closed, and one should not close the door to one's house unless the creature is already trapped. However, one can avoid the prohibition of trapping when opening a door by immediately filling the gap with one's body and closing the door as one enters. Right, one does not violate trapping such a gesis since the animal does not have the opportunity to escape. Right, this is a classic halacha, right? The halacha is that, right, you can't trap something when it's trapped. So if the dog's in the house, right, and you open the door, but you while the door's closed, it can't get out. And as you're opening the door, you block the door with your body. So then that's totally mutter. And he said, special care needs to be taken with birds in this regard, because unlike most pets who are considered to be trapped in one's home, many birds would not be considered to be trapped in one's home if great effort would be required to return the creature to his cage, right? So I remember we had birds growing up, right? You know, we would just like let it, you know, let them fly around, you know, like in one room. It was impossible to get them back in. Right. So if you did, you know, if you did this on Shabbos, not a great idea. But if you did it on Shabbos, right, you'd probably just have to let the bird fly around for the day. But I remember once we had a bird, and the bird was sick and needed, and it was in extreme pain and needed medicine. So my father asked the rabbi of the shul, so what do you do, right? Because, right, this is a real problem. It's not even just a muktzah problem at this point. It's a seda problem.
It's a real tzar ba'al chayim.
Right, but what do you do? Right, because seda could be daraisa. So with the, if I remember correctly, that what the rabbi had said to my father was you stick your hand into the cage, right, when the bird is totally trapped, and you hold the bird, and you feed it while, you know, you give the bird the medicine while it's in your hand and it's fully trapped, right? I mean, you have to, you know, and even if you open the cage, right, you have to make sure that the bird doesn't get out. Because once the bird gets out, right, trapping it might be seda daraisa. So you have to put your hand on the while it's in a enclosed space, right? You know, I mean, you think about it, in the cage, even according to most machmir positions, we said, right, chad shachya. As long as you can get it in one, you know, grasp of your hand, that's considered trapped lekulei alma. So as long as so what we would actually do is you would open the cage, like very, very, you know, small and stick your hand in, or we would actually stick in our hands through the, like that little trap door where the food is, right, and just grab the bird and put it in the mouth, right, because a bird is a particular problem. So if the bird, right, as we said, if the bird returns the cage by itself but gives the owner some resistance where the latter seeks to return the cage, then in a case of great need, one may return such a bird to his cage. But a bird does not return to the cage by itself at all, right, which often is true, right? The birds will just fly around for hours, right? If you let them loose in the house, so then it could be daraisa, so then you wouldn't be able to close the cage door, right? Right, if you accident, right, you know, let's say you tried to get it and then you accidentally open the door and the bird gets out, you have to, you know, leave it. You can't even close the door because once the door is open and it could get out, right, this is, it's seda to close it if it's the type of bird that normally flies around. So that, I think, just sort of summarizes the halachic issues, right? Again, the muktzah issue, again, most poskim think animals are muktzah, at least picking them up. Walking the dog there seems to be good reason to be makil because you're not actually moving it yourself, it's walking by itself, you're just restraining it. I think. I'd have to ask someone whether that's true, but I think it sounds that like that that should be true. Rav Lichtenstein said you don't have to be moche with it. In terms of seda, again, you have these three levels. If it's totally, you've lost control, so then seda daraisa. If you haven't lost control at all, so then it's mutter. And then in the middle, it's machlok as we've shown him, right, where it's somewhat obedient, but it, you know, there's a bit of effort involved. So then the Rashba, Rav Yoh, Baal Iter say it's Mutar L'Chatchila. The Rambam, Tosfos, and others say that it is also Midr Rabbanan. The Mishnah Berurah says L'Chatchila, you should be Machmir. B'Shas Atchak, you could be Mekil. And again, so, you know, all sort of these contours of how that would play itself out. So that's a bit of a wrap-up to the question of the muktzah, the tzeda on the animals, and how it plays out halacha. Halacha l'maisa. Let me just quickly see if I'll Google walking dog on Shabbos, what I get here. Because it sounds like, even according to the muktzah positions, there'd be room for that. I think so. Walking dog on Shabbos. Let's see if I'm right. I don't know. I don't, you know, we only ever had birds.
Did you write Shabbat or Shabbos?
Doesn't matter. They both come up.
Could
so, yeah, so what did I get here?
What kind of dog is it?
Okay, so the first Google that I got from on yeshiva.co.il from Rabbi Chaim Tabaski, I know no idea who that is, but he says, yes, you can. It's permissible to walk a dog on Shabbos. He just notes that it's clear to, right.
Once read where somebody said you have to have a very short leash with a dog.
So he said, right, he says you should have a short leash. Because
Maybe because then the animal is considered mitsuyot, if you like.
I don't know if it's mitsuyot or it's a problem of muksa. So it's also you don't want to be the one, you don't want to be carrying the animal. Let's see what else we got here. Trapping. Chabad.org. Chabad.org also is mekel. It says it's muktzah, and therefore you can't carry the animal or the accessories, or at least in public domain. But you can, walk it on a leash. And they quote who they quote here. Let's see. I assume so. Let's see what they say. Yeah, Shulchan Aruch Harav. There you go. The Shulchan Aruch Harav paskins that animals are mukta, but that walking a dog is mutter because you're not carrying it. So I think that's you've got to love the different websites. Like the fourth website is You're Not Crazy. It's, I don't know. Okay, whatever. Crazy Convert. What, I don't know what it's called. Anyways. So this seems to be Ruvadia also, paskind, that even though it's mukta walking, the dog is mutter because you're not carrying it. So that seems to be the consensus of poskim, right? Is that even though and right, Jachter, it's in the other part of that article writes that as well, right? That walking a dog is not the problem. When we're talking about mukta, we're talking about picking up the dog. But walking the dog is going to be mutter. That we've seen. That's not considered a mukta problem. Okay, so that's just a summary of the halachic issues. So we got to spend more time on it. Good. Okay. Shkoyach.